You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The Mitt Romney campaign is absolutely in screaming turmoil. And I'm curious. You know, what would you do if you were part of Mitt Romney's campaign? Or, no, you know, it's interesting sometimes to put your head inside somebody else's box, inside somebody else's worldview. The Romney campaign is really struggling with it. Here they've got Jack Welch. Jack Welch, the guy who, as CEO of General Electric, quite literally invented the American practice of outsourcing pink and white collar jobs. Jack Welch, in his autobiography, talks about how back in the 70s, 80s, I guess it was the 80s, when he was CEO of GE, he was in India, presumably to sell them a power plant, as I recall. And he looked around and he said, these people speak English. And they work for 10 cents an hour. Why am I paying anybody in New York City or anywhere else in the United States, even minimum wage, to answer the phone, to do my bookkeeping, to do my computer programming, to take orders, to process anything? Why am I doing any of this at U.S. wages when there's people who speak English and who have all these skills here in India? And he wrote a book in which, in his book, he brags about it. So here you have Jack Welch, you know, going on about this. And, you know, some of the questions that I think, you know, are really important. Why did Mitt Romney flip-flop on taxes? Why is he saying, well, yeah, you know, there's a problem. The Supreme Court said that what I did in Massachusetts, what Romney did in Massachusetts, is a tax. But it's not really a tax. It's a penalty in Massachusetts, but not in the United States. In the United States, it's a penalty. It's a tax. But, you know, this is a classic case of Romney trying to have it both ways. Does he need a makeover? Has he scared off his base? Is his team incompetent? I guarantee you, these are the questions right now that right-wingers all over the country are struggling with and working on and trying to figure out, and the Romney team is. And I find the whole thing just fascinating. What I find particularly fascinating is that here you've got a guy, and by the way, thanks so much to Carl Frisch for filling in for me on Tuesday. I wanted to open with that, and in the frenzy of the moment, missed it. Thank you, Carl. Here you've got a guy in Mitt Romney who Vanity Fair over the weekend exposed has checking accounts or savings accounts or brokerage accounts or something, has millions and millions of dollars in Luxembourg, in Ireland, in Switzerland, in the Grand Caymans, in places where you would never, ever expect to see. I mean, it's just you would expect to see somebody running for president of the United States stashing their money. How's he going to pull this thing off? How could he even possibly pull this thing off? I don't know. I have some opinions on this. I think that what's really going on here is that Mitt Romney all his life has been trying to basically be his dad. You know, George Romney ran for president. George Romney was the governor of Michigan back in the 60s. And he was a decent governor for a Republican, as I recall. I mean, I was a little kid at the time, but you know, my recollection. And he came back from Vietnam. He went off to Vietnam to, you know, for one of these dog and pony shows that the military does. And when Mitt came back, there was this argument about the Vietnam War and whether the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was real. I mean, it was starting to come out at that point that maybe we had been lied to. And so George Romney comes back from Vietnam, governor of Michigan, and says, they tried to brainwash me. And he had been pro-Vietnam War before going over there, and he was anti-Vietnam War when he came back, and he said, in fact, I was brainwashed. And that destroyed his presidential candidacy. So it looks to me like the lesson that his son learned out of that is don't ever tell the truth. Don't ever be yourself. Be who you need to be for politics. So, in my opinion, there is no moral compass to Mitt Romney. Or if there is, it is so deeply buried that we may never see it. I mean, just consider how he has been literally on every side of virtually every issue throughout his entire political career. So what do the Republicans do about this? And for that matter, what does the Obama campaign do about this? Now, I think that the big issue that the Obama campaign needs to be going after Mitt Romney on is that he is an out-of-touch plutocrat. He's a guy who hires, you know, who wants to put a garage into his mansion, his seaside mansion in California, where he's living when he's registered to vote in Massachusetts. Voter fraud. he's a guy who hires a lobbyist to lobby the city to put an elevator in his house for his wife's second Cadillac so that she can fit a couple of Cadillacs into one garage. Or maybe a Cadillac and a Bentley. And then you got to, you know, where's the Rolls going to go? Or maybe, I don't know, maybe he's got a NASCAR team in there, right? Remember somebody asked him, who's your favorite NASCAR team? And he says, well, I don't really know that much about the teams, but I do have a couple of friends who own NASCAR teams. Does that qualify me as a NASCAR fan? No, Mittens, don't think so. So it's an interesting question. How is the Romney campaign going to play the fact that he's been on both sides of everything? I'm very interested to hear. I'm going to be on Larry Kudlow's TV show tonight talking with him and a couple of conservatives about this very topic. And I find it, or broadly speaking, about Mitt Romney's campaign. And I just find it fascinating how much these guys are struggling with this when it's fairly obvious to me. Mitt Romney cannot be authentic. Because if he actually is his authentic self, he probably is a fairly Massachusetts Republican, you know, George Romney kind of Republican. And the George Romney Republicans are not welcome in the Republican Party. I mean, one of his calling cards is that he saved the Olympics. Well, the Olympics is like something about the commons, right? It's a government-run program. I don't think that's going to fly so well with the Republican base. So how's he going to reinvent himself? Well, and by, you know, his sales pitch right now is the economy stinks and it's all Obama's fault, and that he knows how to fix the economy by virtue of the fact that he's made himself $250 million, probably closer to $500 million. You know, he's worth $250 million right now, according to some estimates, but he's put $100 million into his son's. Into a trust for his boys, so that's $350 million.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, how does Romney put together a campaign? How does Obama put together a campaign? What are the main narratives of this campaign going to be this fall?
I'm working hard like a mule, just to get a raise in pay. That's why I'm spending my life with working all the day. I am a hard-working man.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mayor of Lansing, Michigan, my hometown, Mayor Virge Bernero is on the line with us. Mayor, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, and I hope you are well, too.
I am. It's a little warm, but otherwise great.
Okay. So the Obama administration, this is pretty impressive. The Obama administration says that they're going to start calling out, and in this case, China is the first example, calling out unfair trade practices.
That's phenomenal. I mean, I know they've done some things. They've done it on tires. They've done it on some products. They did it to some extent on the currency manipulation. But I'm glad to hear it. When the Commerce Secretary was in Michigan a few years ago, before he became ambassador to China, I stood up and asked him that question. You know, I mean, it's nice to talk about fair trade. Are we going to, you know, is it going to be a two-way street? I mean, I don't want free trade alone. I want free and fair trade.
Yeah.
I think we should treat our competitors exactly like they treat our goods.
It sounds like a plan. And this is the opposite of the way that Mitt Romney is approaching this. He's very command and control. Let the banksters run things. Let the big corporations run things.
Absolutely. I mean, they talk free enterprise and capitalism, but it ain't free. I mean, the fact is, you look at China. China today has more direct interest controlling companies than they did 10 and 20 years ago. I think it's up to like 60% of the companies in China are now owned mostly by the government, whereas it used to be down around 30-40%. So they're actually moving in the opposite direction. And so our companies, American companies, are competing against a nation. They're competing against a country. And so we need a new partnership. You know, Carl Levin, our senator here, is talking about a partnership, a public-private partnership. We need to be in the game. We need to support our companies like the president did with the auto industry and save the auto industry.
So, go ahead.
Well, as you know, the president's starting this bus tour tomorrow, this Betting on America bus tour through northern Ohio and western Pennsylvania. This is a president that believes in the middle class, that believes in the productive capacity of the American worker. The question is, will we make anything in this country, Tom, as you know? I mean, we used to be the manufacturing mecca for the world. There wasn't anything we didn't make.
Yep.
And that's been turned around, and now we have a president who understands that the magic of manufacturing, what I call the magic of manufacturing, because of the spinoff, the supply chain that's involved. In Ohio alone, it's almost 1 million jobs in the auto industry that could have been gone. Poof. You know, we'd be in a depression, not a recession, if the president hadn't stepped in and saved the auto industry. Mitt Romney's made it clear. He said, let them go bankrupt.
Yeah.
He would have let the private sector be on its own, which means it would have been chopped off into pieces. Who knows? Foreign companies would have owned parts of it. It would be vastly different than where we are today, and which is coming back. Unemployment has gone down the last 10 months in Ohio, and things are looking up in Michigan, and it's built on manufacturing, which I think is a good trend, because we all know you got to make things. You can't. I think we've seen in the last few decades, you can't have an economy built on consumerism alone. Great nations have to produce greatly, not just consume greatly.
Oh, Adam Smith, 1776, The Wealth of Nations. The wealth of nations to which he referred was those things that get manufactured. The example being a tree limb on the ground has no intrinsic value. You add human labor to it and turn it into an axe handle. You have now manufactured something. You have produced wealth, which becomes part of the nation's wealth. It's all about manufacturing.
But as you know, Wall Street tried to convince us for the last couple decades that, oh, don't worry about it, because we can be, oh, we're an information economy. Oh, we're a consumer economy. We're this, we're that. And more and more power shifted to the finance class, you know, and the finance industry is not an industry at all. You know, I mean, you're there to support what? To support productive activity, to support manufacturing. Instead, they've moved themselves to the center of the economy, and that's what Romney is all about as a vulture capitalist.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is how Romney made you know, a third of $1 billion, and is sitting on a quarter of $1 billion now. He gave $100 million to his sons. He made this money basically by being a bankster. How can he campaign successfully on that kind of a record? I don't get it.
Well, he needs to be exposed. And again, it's truly, we have a clear choice in the election between a guy who made his money, got his, and didn't worry about anybody else, Bain Capital, which was about putting businesses out offshoring production, explaining to American businesses why they don't need to make things here. They should move it all overseas. And that's no future. You can certainly make money, and many people did. In the short run, you can make money. And as long as you can keep offshoring and outsourcing, the folks at the top can make the money. But the problem is, you're eliminating the middle class. And Barack Obama understands that. We've got to rebuild manufacturing. While we still have a manufacturing capacity left in this country, we've got to invest in manufacturing. We've got to compete with other countries. We've got to get in the game. We need an Apollo-style commitment to manufacturing. And I think that's what we're getting from Barack Obama. He and his team now get it. They understand the loss that has occurred over many decades.
Well, and here's the problem. I would submit to you, Mayor Bernero, that they got it back when they were putting together the stimulus program, that, you know, Jared Bernstein and his other advisors who put that thing together, they got it and they said, okay, you know, we need a couple $1 trillion in stimulus, and we need to be stimulating manufacturing and infrastructure. And, you know, building infrastructure is one of the best ways to stimulate manufacturing, because somebody's got to make that steel. Somebody's got to make that concrete. Somebody's got to make those windows and fill, you know, all that stuff, fill in the blanks. And they took it to Congress, and the Republicans in Congress said, no, let's turn this into one-third tax cuts, and let's cut it down to $800 billion. And he's always going to face this problem, is he not?
Well, there's no question that Congress has been a hindrance. Absolutely no question that they are a drag. They offer no alternatives, but they're there to slow him down or stop him. From day one after the election, the Republicans in Congress were adamant that Barack Obama was going to be a failure. They would see to it, that they would do whatever it takes. And that, to me, is sick and twisted. And that's a new thing in America, that is the ugly partisanship that has developed, that is wrong. And I didn't take that approach when George Bush was president. There was a lot I disagreed with him, you know, but after 9/11, I felt we had to be unified. And you don't get that sense at all. And the fact is, we are at war, not just in terrorism, but an economic war, a war for our future. And we've got a president that understands that needs to be one for the middle class. It's not going to be top down, trickle down. We've had enough of that. It's going to grow from the middle out.
Mayor Virge Bernero of Lansing, Michigan, thank you so much for being with us, Mayor.
Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Great talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So how do you expect Mitt Romney to reinvent himself as we get closer to the election? Because it doesn't seem like what he's doing so far is working. So welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. What's Mitt Romney going to do? How's he going to reinvent himself? William, in Westford, Massachusetts, you should know a little bit about Mitt Romney if you've been living in Massachusetts very long. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Tom? How are you?
Good.
Hey, I've never voted for a Republican ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I had an interesting question put to me yesterday, and it actually is making me think a little bit. Take Democrat and Republican out of the equation, and who constricts the economy? A community organizer or a banker?
Well, clearly, since the bankers broke the economy, a banker would be the very last person that you'd want in charge of the economy. And Barack Obama at this point in time is not a community organizer. He's been president of the United States for 3 years, the leader of the free world. I would prefer to have the president of the United States fix the economy to a guy who made $250 million by laying off, actually $350, maybe $400 million, by laying off people and shipping jobs overseas. Very simple. Very simple. Thanks for asking that incredibly stupid question. Kay in Mechanicsville, Pennsylvania. Hey, Kay, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you're my hero.
Thank you.
I wanted to say two things. First off, what Romney's going to do is the same thing McCain did, and he's going to try to be something he isn't. You remember that really awkward moment when John McCain was sitting in this audience and the woman said that Obama was an Arab? It was that
yeah.
one moment where, like, he was like, guys, I can't go this far. I just
right.
can't. You know, this is the thing I wonder if Obama could do. You know that speech on that new move, that new show on HBO, The Network?
Yeah, I haven't seen the show, but yeah,
oh,
I know all of it.
This woman tells you, what do you love about America? And he finally just says, America is not the best nation on earth. And he goes through all the stats on infant mortality and education. And I wish Obama could make a speech like that, because I think it's time we burst this stupid bubble that America is so damn wonderful, when in fact we're not. And sometimes I'm ashamed. And, I've talked to you before. We're a military family.
Mm-hmm.
And I am ashamed of the stupidity that I hear sometimes in Congress. You know what I mean? And I just wish, like, we could have a bubble-busting moment where we say, this is what America is. I mean, finishes the speech and talks about what it used to be like when we didn't have to beat our chest. You know, when we didn't torture people, when we, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm 55, so I'm old enough, and sometimes people are young around us. They don't remember. They don't understand the power of unions. They did nothing.
No, you're absolutely right. There has been an institutional loss of what the American dream used to be. And it really, you know, there was a really aggressive effort to create that amnesia during the Reagan administration with the whole greed is good thing. Kay, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Jim in Chicago, it says you disagree with me. What's up, Jim?
Good afternoon, Tom. You know, I was driving home today and I was listening to you on the car radio, and I have to warn you, I am a conservative, so don't get mad at me or hang up on me. But
why would I do that?
Well, if I hear one more time about Mitt Romney's wife's Cadillac, first of all, a Cadillac is a piece of junk. When that story first broke and they said his wife's got two Cadillacs, I said, that's all?
Well, at least they're American-made cars, in his defense.
Well, I mean, you know, what is a Cadillac? That's like a Chevrolet with lock nuts.
But you're right. But the point wasn't his wife's second Cadillac. The point was, actually, there were a couple. But, you know, one was he was like, yeah, my, you know, my wife has an American-made car. In fact, she's got two Cadillacs. It's the average person doesn't have two Cadillacs. I think that was the first point. The second was the average person doesn't hire a lobbyist to lobby the city to give them a zoning variance so they can build an elevator in their garage so that they can fit more than one Cadillac in it.
Okay, can I say something about that, though?
Please.
There's one thing interesting about him blowing money on all this very extravagant stuff.
Well, this is not a high level of extravagance, actually.
It's his money.
Well, maybe.
He's earned it.
Maybe. No, I would say that he stole much of it. I would say that those people who worked at that steel factory that his company bought up, sucked out, stole the pension money, fired those people, and shut the thing down and made a huge profit on it when it went bankrupt, I would say that he stole that money from those people.
Okay. Well, let me ask you
this. So you could say it's his money. He stole it fair and square. I would agree with you on that. But I don't see how you can say that he earned it. All Bain Capital and any of these vulture capital firms, all they do is manipulate the tax code.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. Do you think that any of these Democratic politicians are broke? Do you think the Obama family don't have boatloads of money? Do you think Nancy Pelosi...
Barack Obama had student loans that he was paying off when he was a United States senator. He didn't make serious money until his books started selling
because
just before the campaign,
really,
and he's made about $1.5 million from the sale of his books. And plus he makes $400,000 a year as president of the United States. That's it.
Not to rip on the guy, but he's never really had a job. Okay?
What, you think being a professor of a law school is not a job?
Being
a United States senator is not a job?
Okay.
John McCain then's never had a job.
Well, the ex-House
Lindsey Graham's never had a job.
The ex-House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, they are very, very, very wealthy. Very wealthy people.
Nancy Pelosi is not running for president. Secondly, we're talking about Mitt Romney, the guy who made $350 or $400 million ripping off American workers, sending their jobs overseas, shutting down their companies, and now is stashing his money, according to Vanity Fair, just came out in the last couple of days, stashing his money in the Caymans, in Luxembourg, in Ireland, and Switzerland. And you're going to try
Vanity
and tell
Fair?
Me that that
well,
qualifies this guy to be president of the United States?
Who is Vanity Fair? Who are they?
Vanity Fair has an incredible record of investigative reporting. If you're denying the facts, you're going to have to take it up with the Romney campaign because they're acknowledging those facts.
All I can say
is... They are not disputing what's in the Vanity Fair report or the Associated Press report that went along with it.
Well, what I could say to you about Mitt Romney and all his money and all of his bank accounts, it seems like this man can handle money and make it grow, and that's what we need in this country.
We need a bankster who steals money from people to be president of the United States.
Whatever. I don't think the Obama administration...
That's like saying that we need an oil guy to be president of the United States. Oh, by the way, what's he going to do as president? He's going to invade the second oil-richest nation on Earth, Iraq. That worked out really well, didn't it?
Okay. K, Can I run an experiment by you for this country?
Sure.
Let's do this. Let's cut the country in half, and half of the country lives by the Democratic idealism, and the other half lives by the Republican idealism. And you can live wherever you want to live. We'll have red states and blue states.
Jim, I'll tell you, that's already happening. And right now, the net transfers to the red states on average, for every dollar in taxes that they pay into the federal government, they're getting back about $1.12, $1.15, in some cases as much as $1.20, like down in Mississippi. Whereas the blue states, for every dollar that they pay into the federal government, they're getting back 70 cents, 80 cents, maybe 90 cents. There is a massive transfer of wealth going on right now from the blue states to the red states. The red states are massive welfare recipients at the same time that their governors are running around going, independent, individual responsibility. It's all about individual responsibility. But they're on welfare. The red states. The experiment that you're describing has already happened, Jim. Take a look.
Okay, well, I'm a nice guy, and if it ever does really go down and happen like that, I will personally help you move to the red state, because that's where you'll want to live.
Why would I want to live in a poor state like Mississippi?
Because there'll be no crime,
because there'll be no crime? There, you know,
right.
Mississippi has one of the...
People
will
actually be working and not making excuses. You know what, Tom? I got 11 people in my family. I got 11 people
You're
in my
family.
You're
seriously telling me that poor states, the red states, these states that are living in poverty, where you've got, you know, very, very high rates of people on Medicaid, because you have to be poor to qualify for Medicaid, that those states are the places where it's easiest to get a job? Are you seriously trying to tell me that?
Yep, I am.
Where do you live?
I live in Illinois.
It says Illinois, yeah.
Yeah.
I would suggest that you visit Mississippi. I'll bet you never. You know, I lived in Atlanta for 14 years, 13 years. I can tell you about the South, and I can tell you about the poor South versus the wealthy South, because Atlanta was the wealthy South, and you don't want to be, or for that matter, the poor. You know, poor Appalachia. I've been in West Virginia. The poor Midwest. You know, I grew up in Michigan. I've been watching my own state being torn apart by insane trade policies. I mean, you don't want to be living in a state that is practicing Republican economics, Romney economics. Romney economics only works for bankers like Romney.
You know, this health care bill that everybody's so proud of, I vote in the 8th district in Cook County, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And we called our congresswoman's office, Melissa Bean's office. Mm-hmm. We called her office at least 10 times and asked her how she was going to vote on that health care bill.
You mean on the Romney Obamacare bill?
Whatever you want to call it, that's fine. I'm going all the way back to when the bill was first introduced.
Right, the Heritage Foundation Romney Obamacare bill.
It went on the floor late Sunday night. They all voted for it.
Yeah.
You know, prior to that happening, I called her.
Here's what baffles me, Jim. Why is it that the conservatives came up with this legislation? The Heritage Foundation promoted it. Newt Gingrich was its biggest promoter in the 90s as Speaker of the House during the Clinton administration as an alternative to Hillary Care. Then Mitt Romney took it in 2002 or 3 or 4 and put it into place in Massachusetts. It's all been Republican all the way, and now the Republicans hate it. I'm baffled.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Which brings us back to the fundamental problem Mitt Romney has, which is how can he run for president as somebody other than himself?
Rich men in a darkened room, making plans to fuel the corporate boom. Flowers of evil begin to bloom.
Welcome back to the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Give me a break. Get off my lawn. Bobby in Buffalo Grove, Illinois. Hey, Bobby, what's on your mind? Bobby? Bobby's not there. Okay, Paul in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing, Tom? I love the show.
Thanks.
Hey, kind of to piggyback on what one of the previous callers was saying about the aborted fetus recycling.
Stericycle is the company that Bain Capital bought that was disposing of aborted fetuses. Yeah.
The other thing that I think the left is really, really missing capitalizing on is Mitt Romney is the only governor in United States history, and this has to do with gun control, he signed the only permanent assault weapons ban in the country. And yet he
oh, really?
Is somehow getting, yes, he did. And he is somehow getting endorsed by the NRA. And when he was running then, the NRA trashed him because he claimed to be a lifetime hunter. And then it came out that he'd only ever been hunting once. So he's, you know, once again, it's just another hole.
In well, the, he likes just, to you shoot know, varmints, you know.
Right, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, it's...
His dog, Seamus, has been missing for a long, long time. I mean, you know.
The stuff that Obama has accomplished, if he were white and Republican, the Republicans would be trying to get his face added to Mount Rushmore. And the hypocrisy kills me.
Yeah, yeah. And we saw the same thing going on with George W. Bush. It's really quite remarkable. Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. Great to hear from you. Jim in Eagle, Colorado. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing? Enjoy the show.
Thank you. It says here you're a Republican.
And I'm lukewarm.
Okay.
And I just wanted to say, I'm sure I'm glad you changed the time of your show because you're live now.
It's yeah,
great.
Me too.
Now, I never heard you talk about that, you changed your time, but maybe it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, we did. So.
Anyway, I just wanted to ask you a question about Obama. Why does he get all the credit when Bush was the one who signed the executive order to bail out GM and Chrysler, and the Canadian government also bailed some of them out? Well, why does Obama get all the credit?
Well, first of all, there were large pieces of that bailout that happened during the Obama administration. Secondly, Mitt Romney was totally opposed to it from the get-go. And third, I'm not sure that George Bush signed that legislation. Are you certain of that?
It was last week he was in office. It was the week before that the Congress voted no to bail them out.
Yeah.
And Bush signed the executive order the week before. And I think Obama just followed along exactly how Bush had it planned out because they had to pay him back quite a bit.
I don't know that's
the deal. Yeah.
You know, Jim, I'm going to have to do a little bit of research here before I let that just stand as a statement. Shane is trying to track that down. I'm sure the folks in the chat room will let me know what's going on with that because that is not congruent with my recollection. But who knows? Mike in Portland. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was calling about the way Romney refuses to answer questions and talks around the issues. It's almost as if the thought patterns the same way, I can only guess, as the flat world thinkers did back in their day when they insisted the world was flat. And they want to speak to the crowd that holds their point of view. And that's to ignore the fact that other countries throughout the world are able to work out this healthcare system, as well as provide their citizens an agricultural crop known as hemp. And we allow our politicians to continue to refuse to. We accept that they don't answer
yeah.
the question.
Yeah, no, Canada's making a fortune on hemp, if you want to, you know, switch to that topic. But I you know, and I'm with you on that. Chris in Nancock, Michigan. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to make a point that your conservative buddy from Chicago, Illinois, very brightly illustrated, and that is right now in this country, that's a big problem, is we can't have a political dialogue or discourse because half of us, like he says, want it divided into red and blue, and those in the red want to live in their own little private alternate universe where Fox News is true and 100% correct and reality doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a sad thing. It really is. But it's also, you know, welcome to the world of politics in 2012. I mean, it's just this is what we have, and we have to figure out how to get through it. Chris, thanks for the call. Clarence in Boise, Idaho. Okay, Clarence, what's up?
Well, hey, I thought I'd like to pass along a little information about how possibly insurance companies keep their money in their, you know, on their bottom line. I was doing some volunteer work for a nationally recognized company, suffered a debilitating accident, you know, did all the proper things and got all the pre-approval and liability waivers and stuff. And then after everything's all paid and done and set for, my insurance company where I work denies my claim and wants all the money back. So if you do any type of volunteer work for any organization, you know, read the exclusions, even if you're covered, even if you sign a waiver. And I believe this is how the insurance companies keep.
I can guarantee you, Clarence, nobody has read their insurance policy. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Linda in Fresno, Ohio. Hey, Linda, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
I just had one question. Do you know if there's a provision in the health care program to prohibit insurance companies from raising premium rates if you get sick?
Yes, there is. That's a policy that the insurance companies used to do. In fact, instead of just doing outright rescission, instead of just kicking people off their policies, what they would do is they would say, ah, your policy rate just went from $800 a month to $4,000 a month.
Yeah, I had a friend that happened to.
They can't do that anymore. Actually, they can still do it right now to anybody except kids starting in either next year, 2013 or 2014. They can't do it at all to anybody.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, that's part of Obamacare. And they have to spend 80 to 85% of all the money that they take in actually making you well. Medicare, of course, spends 97% of the money that they take in making people well. So this is like a giant gift of, 12%, I guess, to the insurance companies. But still, it's better than what it used to be where they took 30, 40% of the money and just kept it. So, coming up next, a conservative senator says no coverage for cancer. Really? Do conservatives really support that?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Ron Johnson, the Republican from Wisconsin, the fine fellow who replaced Russ Feingold, if my math is correct on this, has come out and said that we shouldn't have laws requiring businesses to cover employees' health insurance policies that cover cancer. Because if you do it for one person, well, his words, because that would create an obligation for others. He said, when you create a right for somebody, you create an obligation for somebody else, and then you're taking away that person's right. This is an interesting concept. Mark Williams, conservative commentator and author, former chair of the Tea Party Express, his website, marktalk.com, on the line with us. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. Always fun.
Mark, you said that the upholding of Obamacare opens the door to a Dickensian world where decisions over when to, or even if to, treat somebody will boil down to anonymous functionaries deep in the bureaucratic bowels of Washington, D.C. Am I accurately quoting you?
Yeah, and that's already begun. The IRS has drafted, at this point, 13,000 pages of regulations with a lot more to come. Among them, you can't choose your own doctor. You can't choose your own treatment. Your doctor can't choose your treatment. Everything has got to go through the bureaucracy before they decide whether or not you're worthy to save.
Mark, have you been taking LSD?
The insurance companies would be free to compete with coverage.
Mark, I'm stuttering. I don't know where you're getting this stuff. I mean, I'm quite familiar with the Obamacare law. The IRS, their only responsibility with regard to Obamacare is if you're one of that 1%, and it's actually less than 1% in Massachusetts, but the Heritage Foundation, when they originally proposed this law, and when Newt Gingrich was pushing it so hard on the floor of the House of Representatives in the 1990s as an alternative to Hillary Care, both Newt Gingrich and the Heritage Foundation said it would be 1% or less of Americans who choose to be free riders, who are healthy and who have high income levels and choose not to buy health insurance until the day that they get sick, that those people who are going to have to pay $695 a year, that money will be collected by the IRS. That's the beginning and end of it.
No, not according to the IRS, not with 13,000 pages under their belt. And we're just beginning, as Nancy Pelosi said.
Mark, where are you reading this?
Find out what's in it. We're just beginning to find out what's in it. And what's in it
where are you reading this?
Scenario where whether or not you live or die could be left up to some bureaucrat.
Okay. Well, let's stipulate for a moment that I don't believe a word of that, and you have not provided us with any kind of source, okay? Or do you have it? Can you tell me a source where I can actually verify what you're saying?
Okay.
You can't?
Well, you'll find a link on Drudge today. You'll find a link to the story.
Okay.
Which I believe originated with Fox News.
Okay. Somehow I'm not surprised. That said, let's agree. The bureaucrats are making decisions about your health insurance and mine, your health care and mine, what we can and can't have. Okay, we agree on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the question then becomes, because somebody has to make the decision, right? Somebody has to say, okay, you know, we don't cover, you know, cosmetic surgery. We do cover appendectomies. Somebody has to make those decisions. Or that was a real appendectomy as opposed to liposuction that you tried to pass off as an appendectomy. And so somebody's got to make that kind of decision. Right now, those decisions are being made by bureaucrats in the bowels of for-profit health insurance companies who are not answerable to we the people at all. And in more than half the states in the United States, you can only choose between two. And in about 20% of the states in the United States, there's only one. So basically, you have no option. You are totally at their mercy. Would you rather have bureaucrats working for a guy who makes $1 billion as the CEO of a health insurance company and whose only commitment by law is to making more profit for his company, even if that means you die? Would you rather have him making those decisions, or a bureaucrat who works for him? Or would you rather have a bureaucrat who is answerable to your member of Congress making those decisions, who you can vote out of office if you don't like the way he behaves?
You're kind of making my point for me. If the argument is that we don't have enough choices, that there's not enough competitiveness, that that the insurance companies or whomever's providing doesn't have to answer to their customers and to their stockholders, that is my point.
I think I'm making a strong case for a public option as part of
insurance companies would be able to compete with each other for customers. High risk customers, yeah, would pay more. Low risk customers would pay less. That's the way the free market works. And what's going to be happening now with this Obama tax and Obamacare is that we will eventually, as President Obama has said is his goal, eliminate all private competition, go to a single source, and that means we are so far removed from the people
that is completely answerable to us. You haven't answered my question, Mark. How is United Healthcare answerable to, how can you protest anything
to their customers? And if we
so you don't think government is answerable to its customers?
They would have to compete.
You don't think government is answerable to its customers?
No.
Why is it that people who have TRICARE, the government-run medical program for the military, have such... Are you going to let me finish a sentence once in a while, Mark? Apparently not. Mark, I'm going to put you on hold here and ask this question because I would like to finish a sentence once in a while. Why is it that people who are on TRICARE in the military who have access to government-run health insurance or people who are on Medicare have the highest satisfaction levels, vastly higher than any private for-profit insurance company?
The VA is rife with horror stories.
Is United Healthcare, so is Aetna, so is Blue Cross Blue Shield. But why is it that they have higher satisfaction rates according to all surveys, including conservative surveys?
I don't know that they do. What I'm telling you is your argument is that you don't have choices. And
no.
That's my argument.
No,
well.
My argument
you
is that...
have choices.
My argument is that if bureaucrats are going to be making these decisions, as they always have and they always will, because somebody has to make that decision, and we call them bureaucrats, those people who are deciding who gets paid and who doesn't. If they're going to be making those decisions, I would rather it's bureaucrats who work for we the people, because I'm an American and I believe in our American governmental system. I realize conservatives don't believe in the American governmental system. They believe in a transnational corporate system. But I believe in the American governmental system. I'd rather have people working for me than people working for Stephen J. Hemsley at United Healthcare.
Well, all it takes to understand the concept of what I'm trying to get across to you is to watch television for a half hour and watch all the competing auto insurance companies beating each other over the head to provide superior coverage at a lower cost. That's exactly what would happen if we had a free market in healthcare. You'd have that little Geico thing, that little gecko on TV trying to sell you life insurance or health insurance that was superior at a lower rate. Those bureaucrats would be answering to the stockholders. The stockholders
people can choose not
to profitable on the customer base.
Mark, we have that right now. You can buy Aetna in any state in the United States. You can buy United Healthcare in any state in the United States. In fact, United Healthcare sells literally in every state in the United States. You can Blue Cross, Blue Shield. I mean, pretty much all of these companies sell every place. You have that right now. The problem.
No, I don't.
What you're arguing is that individual states should not have. Let me finish this damn sentence, will you please? What you're arguing is that individual states should not have the right to regulate health insurance companies. They regulate auto insurance companies right now.
There is a reason why if you are
the customer of some auto insurance companies and you move to Vermont, they will drop you.
Not that the states shouldn't regulate. The states, of course, have an obligation to regulate. That's one of their duties. But we should have a free market. We shouldn't be dependent on a corrupt.
So then why do you support the Republican governors who are saying they're refusing to set up free market open exchanges in their states?
Those are government-run exchanges.
No, they're not.
Now, let's reverse things here for a second.
Those are marketplaces.
Let's reverse things here for a second.
The government runs every marketplace, Mark.
President, what happens when the healthcare system orders women to have abortions or prohibits them from having abortions? What happens if some
Mark, what happens when your for-profit insurance company orders you to shoot yourself in the head? I mean, these are absurd questions. Okay. Well, you know, our listeners can figure this out for themselves one way or the other. Mark, you've made your argument. I've made mine. People can read your stuff over at marktalk.com, Twitter at TalkMark. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And so, where is healthcare going to go in the United States? We'll see. More on that right after this.
Tell me, how can a poor man stand such times a day?
Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. No, there's still lots to do. We have such a ways to go here. And we have the tools, I think, in large part to get things done if enough of us show up. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I got to respond quickly to a couple of your conservative callers. First of all, that guy Jim in Illinois there who called himself a conservative, I don't know what makes him so conservative, because all I could tell was he panned two proud American products in an American magazine. He called a Cadillac a piece of junk.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting trigger happy here about obscenity. I'm sorry I dropped you. I meant to have my finger over the dump button and it hit the wrong one. My apologies. Try and call back. Steve in Detroit. Hey, Steve. Says you disagree with me.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I do.
By the way, before you start, Steve, if I may, we had a caller earlier who said, why isn't George W. Bush getting credit for the whole auto industry bailout thing? It turns out that Bush did do a small initial amount of money, but the big money came during the Obama presidency. It was Barack Obama who had to decide whether or not to bail out Detroit. What George W. Bush did is basically kick the can down the road until after the elections. Back to you.
Okay, so a couple things. I'll start with that. I was going to talk about Romney, but I'll comment on that very quickly. You know, when you say that Romney is a vulture capitalist and harms these companies, it's extremely naive to look at what happened with the bailout and say that nobody was harmed. I live in Detroit. Do you know how many auto dealers were forced to close?
Well, had it been Mitt Romney, it would have been 100% of them.
But what's the difference, Tom?
Well, I think that having 20% close instead of 100% is a good thing. If those are the choices, if it's a binary choice like that.
But they're doing the exact thing. You're just choosing to ignore it.
The situation that we had, Steve, and I'm sure if you reflect a little bit, you'll get this. Just like with housing, the situation we had was a bubble, an economic bubble. It was fueled by cheap credit, thanks to Alan Greenspan. And that cheap credit was allowing people to buy cars that they really shouldn't have been buying, and buying houses that they really shouldn't have been buying. And when that bubble burst and people could no longer afford to buy those cars, there was no need for a lot or those houses. There were a lot of real estate dealers who and brokers and brokerages that went out of business because nobody was buying houses, and there were a lot of car dealers that went out of business. That's called a contraction of a market, right? That's a normal thing. The bubble shouldn't have been allowed to exist in the first place.
It really, from the purposes of whether the types of things that Romney does as a venture capitalist are bad and evil, you're trying to say there's no difference between, that there is a difference between what he's doing and what was done to save the auto company.
Yes.
It's just the degree.
No, it's not.
The degree.
They're completely different. What Romney does is exploit the tax code to buy companies wring every penny he can out of them, steal their pension funds, ship their labor overseas.
Let's talk about that real quick, even when the company fails,
even when nobody makes money, Mitt Romney makes money because he's exploiting loopholes in the tax code. That's got nothing to do with the auto bailout.
Where you said that they steal pension funds, I'm assuming, I'm sure you do, you're an intelligent guy, that you know what the PBGC is. And
yes,
you know what the Department
pension,
of Labor is.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. You cannot terminate a defined benefit pension plan.
No, but what you can do is roll it over to the PG, whatever it is, and then they end up paying 20 cents on the dollar, 30 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar. You don't get a dollar on the dollar. So those people where Mitt Romney used the laws of the United States to dump the pension liabilities on you and me, the taxpayer, when in those cases where he did that, those pensioners did not get their whole pensions that they paid into.
But, you know, but then,
Romney
then
took the money and ran.
Then in the interest of fair play, you said a little bit earlier, I've been listening to you all afternoon, you said that he raided those pension funds and took the money.
Yes.
Okay, at least clarify that that's not true.
No, if he is taking the money out of the corporation in a way that causes that pension fund to go broke so that you and I, the taxpayers, end up having to pay them through the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, why won't you let me finish a sentence when you ask a question?
Go ahead.
Okay. My point was that you asked, how is it that he's stealing from the pension funds when you rip off a company, when you squeeze all the money out of that company to the point where it goes under and those pension liabilities get dumped on you and me, the taxpayers, and then the pensioners get 20, 30 cents on the dollar. Everybody gets screwed except Mitt Romney. How is it? Let me turn this around, Steve. How is it that virtually every one of these deals, Mitt Romney made money, so much money that he ended up with almost $500 million for just a couple of decades worth of work? How is it that he always made money when so many other people lost money on these deals?
Because he helped companies like Domino's Pizza and Staples. I mean,
can you buy anything made in America in Staples?
I probably not.
Yeah, those are really the kind of companies we need in America, huh?
Well, Tom, you know, we're going to disagree, but I think you need to be a little bit more honest about some of your comments because you're really.
Romney did not do his Bain Capital vulture thing with Domino's or with Staples. And in fact, with Staples, they were the eighth out of eight investors.
Well,
they were the smallest of the eight investors.
Then you're disagreeing with David Brandon because he gives him credit. Tom, I have to let you go. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. Randy in Orange County, California. Hey, Randy, what's up?
I'm just out here on the freeway in beautiful Southern California.
Okay. And you wanted to say?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, I just bought gas at a 76 station, and they asked me for my ID. So if the illegal
is this
of the country, is this who?
No, I was going to say, is this a call about how you should have ID to vote? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, yeah.
You do have to have ID to vote. You have to sign a piece of paper in every state in the union that matches the signature that you registered to vote with. It's a way of validating who you are. And you have to demonstrate who you are when you register to vote. This is, again, more people are struck by lightning every year than vote illegally. What illegal immigrant in their right mind would show up at a polling place and say, "Hi, I want to be visible to the federal government"? What felon in their right mind would say, "Hi, I'd like to go back to prison for voting illegally"? It doesn't happen. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And, you know, Republican talking points aside, the last time I went to a gas station and used a credit card, nobody asked me for ID. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. We'll see where this whole thing goes. Brain, I'm going to do that at the top of the next hour. My apologies. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Cecil in Sierra Madre, California. Hey, Cecil, what's up?
Well, I was thinking that we were paying much higher taxes than they're talking about nowadays for the wealthiest people. Like when we were trying to pay for World War II, I was working in the business manager's office, and I'm quite sure that the wealthiest were paying something like 90% on their top.
91% after you made the equivalent of about $1 million in today's money, yeah.
That was what I was wondering was about where the figure broke, because it seems so the people get so excited about trying to pay for what we spent.
Yeah, no, if we simply rolled back the Reagan tax cuts, then thank you, Cecil, for the call. Hey, if we simply rolled back the Reagan tax cuts, so much would be solved. I mean, look at rolling back the Reagan tax cuts would take us from 35% to 74%, only on the richest, only on the top money that they make. Their first, you know, their middle class income would be taxed at a middle class rate. Their poor income would be taxed at a poor rate. It's only on their rich, rich income that gets taxed at the rich, rich rate, right? So what's the problem? The fact of the matter is that when we had those top tax rates pre-Reagan, before Reagan dropped it from 74 down to 28%, we were able to pay for good schools, good roads, send a man to the moon, et cetera, et cetera. We did all of that. And we did it successfully. We did it fine. Thank you very much. We had a strong social safety net. We had a country that worked. 30 years of Reaganomics has devastated this country. Bill in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Glad to be on. I just wanted to make a comment about the discussion you had with Mark about the healthcare deal. And,
sure.
You know, it just seems like these guys just keep wanting to, you know, tell you that you can't have a choice. But the word option does mean choice. If we had a single-payer option, I don't believe that would cut out people with means to getting any kind of health care that they want. And so I just think that, you know, rather than get wrapped into what they're trying to say and get angry, it seems to me that we could, you know, carpet the argument around the fact is option means choice.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Thank you very much. Excellent. And in the chat room, Sue Nethercutt points out these are the links that apparently Mark was talking about. Lawyers have already drafted 13,000 pages of regulations for new Obama tax law. This from an obscure right wing website. And Congressman Denny Rayberg of Montana, Republican, says, quote, there's already 13,000 pages of regulations and they're not done yet, end quote. Okay, that's different than tax code, and I'm not sure that a right-wing wackadoodle Tea Party congressman from Oklahoma is an authoritative source about what's going on inside the Obama administration. So, I don't know. But somebody will always try to blame it on the unions. Jim in Philadelphia, you want to do that?
Well, I wanted to talk about education, yes, because I feel that the teaching jobs are being cut all over the place. And I heard recently that 600,000 teaching jobs have been lost and that projected there should have been 700,000 created, which means 1.2 million jobs are missing, which means that if you multiply classes of children by 30 million children aren't getting educated. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about...
Well, or they're getting poorly educated because they're in large classrooms. What does this have to do with unions?
Well, the thing about the...
All of these cuts have happened in red states by Republican governors,
right,
for the record.
Right, they're trying to outsource the jobs to charter schools.
Well, in some cases. And in other cases, they're simply saying have larger classroom sizes. You know, the Heritage Foundation, I believe it was, it might have been Cato, one of these think tanks came out with a study showing that there's no difference in outcome between 30 kids in a class and 50 kids in a class.
Well, there certainly is. We all know that.
Well, common sense would indicate that, but again, what
25 starts to get really awkward.
What do the unions have to do with this?
Well, the unions, to me, should be negotiating to try to start take the pension funds and flip them into 401ks.
Why?
Because the
401ks are crummy ways to plan for your retirement.
Not if they're well managed. And
so we should all go out and find somebody the caliber of Mitt Romney's bookkeeper to manage our 401k?
I don't want Mitt Romney.
Do you want to turn your 401k over to Goldman Sachs? I mean, you know,
I don't want to give anything to Mitt Romney.
How do you know? This is why pensions are a good deal, because you know exactly every day of your life how much money you're going to get when you retire, and you know that you're going to get it until the day you die, no matter how long you live. That's what a defined benefit pension is. Here's your benefit. It's going to be 40%, or it's going to be 80%, or it's going to be 10%, or it's going to be 100% of your paycheck until the day you die. My dad had a pension that, as I recall, was around 65% of his paycheck, and he had that until the day he died. And then when he died, mom actually got a smaller piece of it. It dropped down to something, I don't know, 20, 30, 10%, something like that, until she died. And that, you know, that's called planning. But saying, oh, gee, I've got $26,000 in the bank, and I'm going to put it in Apple stock, or I'm going to put it in gold, or I'm going to bury it under my mattress. That's not planning.
Well, if they're well managed, they really do work.
I mean, tell that to anybody who had stock in the stock market in 2007, 2008.
Well, they recovered. If you left it all alone, they did recover.
For the short term, for the moment.
I think it's a sticking point, though, for the...
But back to the unions. This is what I don't get, is people who say that the unions are in some way responsible for this. Why was it that during the time when America's education was the envy of the world, the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, why was it during that period of time we had strong unionization, virtually 100% unionization among our teachers, and we had the best schools on earth? And now all of a sudden it's the union's fault?
I'm not blaming the unions for having contracts, and I have no problem with contracts. My issue is that governments don't want to hire teachers because they don't want to pay them these pensions. So I'd rather see the teachers working and maybe gradually flipping.
So you're in favor of a race to the bottom?
I'm sorry?
You're in favor of a race to the bottom. You think because some people in the private sector are getting screwed by their employers, those people who work for government should also get screwed by their employers?
No, that's not at all what I'm saying.
Well, it's the consequence of what you're saying.
No, we need the teachers.
20 years ago, teachers made less than people made in the private sector. Right, the average private sector job paid more than the average teaching job in the United States, and it did from the 1920s right up, in, maybe even long before that. As far as I know, they've only kept statistics in the 1920s. But from the 1920s up until the early 1990s, teachers made less than people in the private sector. You know, my dad worked in a tool and die shop and did the bookkeeping. He made more than a teacher did.
They're underpaid.
But the teachers now are making less, now making more than people in the private sector. And so Scott Walker and all of his Republican buddies are saying, oh, that's terrible. Look at these teachers. They're making more money than you are. Therefore, we need to screw them. I don't understand the logic of that.
Well, I'm on your side with most of these issues. However, I just think that the sticking points here are that teachers are being laid off. They're not hiring teachers.
The red state governors.
We have no problem with the military.
There are blue states that are hiring teachers. And in those states that have raised their taxes over the last 2 years and that have raised their spending over the last 2 years, and there's 24 states that have done this, mm-hmm. they have seen their unemployment rates go down. In other words, employment has been going up, and they've seen employment go up in their economies. Their GDPs of the states are going up. There is a clear experiment going on in the United States. 25 red states, you've seen GDP go down, economic activity go down, and unemployment get worse under Scott Walker, Rick Snyder kind of policies, John Kasich kind of policies. And in 24 blue states in the United States, under Democrats, you have seen unemployment get better. The numbers are getting better. Fewer people are unemployed. You've seen economic activity increase, and instead of teachers getting laid off, in many cases, they're getting hired. Tell me that isn't a pretty clear, you know, outcome.
Well, that's the outcome we want, but we're not getting it.
Well, you're getting it in the blue states.
Well, I don't know what state I live in anymore. It used to be blue, but I think it's starting to get all...
Oh, you're in Pennsylvania. Purple. You've got Tom Corbett. He's a wackadoodle right-wing Tea Party Republican.
I know what
governor.
He is.
Yeah. So in all probability, in your state, you're seeing these jobs go away. Jim, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. Jesse in, I can't pronounce that city in California. Jesse, what is it?
Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, Rancho Cucamonga. Okay, great.
Yeah,
so we got a minute to the break. It's all yours.
Okay, great. Listen, Tom, I'm concerned with the whole health care issue. It seems like people that are on the repeal wagon don't understand really what the benefits are that they're gonna be recipients of.
You're right.
Why is it that we or government, especially the Obama administration, has not put out, or even the super PACs that are on the Obama side, put out information so that these people can realize what advantages they're going to have right now, as a matter of fact, not necessarily in 2014. Why isn't this information disseminated so that they can go against these wackadoodle?
The Obama administration has not only put this information out and not only held numerous press conferences, none of which got covered on Fox News and most of which didn't get covered by any of the other media, they've even created a website called healthcare.gov, where all the details of the Affordable Care Act are presented in a way that an eighth grader could easily understand. So they have been trying to get the message out and trying very aggressively. You know, last week we went through and just read large parts of that website to people. So it's just not working.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it's not working getting that message out because the corporate media, by and large, more frequently puts Republicans on the air and would rather attend to the Republican talking points than to the facts. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Ellen Ratner on the line with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. And Ellen, first of all, welcome back from South Sudan. I always say a prayer for you when you go off on these trips to help out people in these godforsaken parts of the world, and I mean that literally.
Well, you know, you've
literally
been there, Tom, and you know what it's like over there.
Yes, I was there with you.
It's its own separate country, but not a whole lot has changed in terms of security, et cetera. In fact, it's probably a little worse than we were there, because, of course, now it's two separate countries, and the South has cut off, South Sudan, new country, has cut off its oil digging or drilling from the North, because the North was stealing its oil, and so they said, well, we'd sort of rather starve than to give the North the oil. And of course, a lot of this is the Bashir issue. There's apparently an
Bashir, the president of North Sudan, of Sudan, to the north of
Sudan.
South Sudan. Yeah.
And Bashir, interestingly enough, Tom, there's an 100-year-old psychic medium type that lives in South Sudan, and apparently she's been very good at predicting things. She says Bashir will be gone by the end of next January, so we'll see. Because there's very much an Arab Spring going on there. And, of course, as soon as I
in
left...
Sudan?
Yes, in the north, very much. In fact, while we were there, they broke into an agency press office and arrested the staffer in Khartoum, or close to Khartoum, were reporting on an Arab Spring kind of uprising.
Wow. So Bashir could be the next Gaddafi, is that what you're saying?
Oh, and it's very possible that he will go.
Huh.
And once he goes, then, of course, there can be all kinds of negotiations. Then I took a plane out on Sunday, and as soon as I arrived, there was, of course, this church bombing, two church bombings. And what's interesting is that, of course, there a lot of suspicion is that it's the Somalis. Well,
the church bombings were where?
In Kenya.
In Kenya, okay.
Yes, and as I stood to get a visa for CHEER, a student visa for CHEER at the Kenyan embassy, there was a Somali man that came up and talked to me and another embassy staffer who happens to be a friend of mine from a long time ago. And the man wanted to get a visa for his mother. He's a naturalized American citizen. He wanted to get a visa for his mother to come because the situation with Somalis is that the Kenyans are so paranoid and they are so convinced that the Somalis are causing all of this, that if they see somebody of Somali defense, and this was supported by some in the U.S. Embassy, they will just round them up, put them in jail for anywhere between a day and 2 months, no access to a lawyer. Nobody knows what happens to them.
Wow. Does this have anything to do with Osama bin Laden's mother being Somali?
I really don't know. I mean, I think that, as you know, there's been a lot of trouble with Somali.
That's the country he was expelled to when Saudi Arabia stripped him of his citizenship. Pardon my interruption.
They've made incursions into Kenya and snapped tourists off the beach and things like that. And so they're very unpopular, to say the least, in Kenya. Anyhow, there's a lot of this sort of undercurrents that don't really even make it to the front pages in the newspaper. Very, very active there in terms of some of the politics and other problems.
Fascinating. And speaking of news and politics, what's going on in the United States here?
Okay, well, in the United States, the president is in the great state of Ohio, and then he'll be in Pennsylvania tonight. He's actually be spending the night in Akron. His theme, his bus tour theme is called Betting on America. And he said that his jobs plan, the American Jobs Act, would help put those back to work. Ohio had a 7.5% unemployment rate in May. The problem is that the Republican governor, Kasich, used to be a member of Congress and also a Fox News analyst, and the Republican running for Senate, my cousin by marriage, Josh Mandel, aren't really putting forth a plan that makes sense to Ohioans because there isn't a plan.
How is it that Josh, crazy cousin Josh, well, maybe I shouldn't call him crazy, but how is it that your cousin Josh, who's running against Sherrod Brown, and you're supporting Sherrod Brown, of course, how is it that he's getting any traction at all?
I don't see him. I think that unless it's evangelicals in Ohio and some independents who are a little more religious, he's fallen like a rock in many other areas. And then somebody on Huffington Post dug up from his high school yearbook at Beechwood High School in 1995, him and another guy dressed in drag.
Well, that can't help.
Well, not if you're based with evangelicals.
Right.
That just happened like yesterday or so.
Yeah. Was this just Josh dressing up to be funny, or is there something?
Oh, I think it was him dressing up to be funny. No, okay. I don't think anything. But again, if it's one thing, it's a Democrat and whatever. But if your base is evangelicals, that's not what I would suggest.
Sure.
Couple other things that happened. As you know, Hillary Clinton apologized to Pakistan, and now they're opening up these supply routes.
Yes.
They're estimating now that it's going to save 80 to $100 million a month by those supply routes being open.
Uh-huh.
Now, one, that's a good thing, but two, is it costing that much to divert? I mean, that is $1 billion a year.
Yeah.
That's a lot of food stamps.
That is amazing when you think about it. It's you know, how much and how badly this whole effort in Afghanistan and Iraq has cost the United States. I mean,
now, the other good thing that happened is the Obama administration did suggest that they're going to actually, with the World Trade Organization, challenge Chinese tariffs on U.S. auto exports. And they're saying that there's actually an enormous amount of money that is being used on this, and that $3 billion worth of duties on American-made cars and SUVs. You know, they pushed and pushed and pushed China to join the World Trade Organization. They finally do, and now they're breaking the rules. Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, me neither. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Brought to you by the German Embassy. You can learn more online at germany.info. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about Mitt Romney and his tax havens. Some really interesting information coming out about this. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, first of all, welcome back to the top of the hour here. It used to be that politicians, the big thing that they did was present themselves as average people, folks, part of the American middle class, or at least in the case of a rich guy like Franklin Roosevelt, they presented themselves as understanding the needs of the middle class and working people. The idea that a rich donor might give money to a candidate's campaign and then expect that candidate to vote their way, for example, was shocking. It was considered bribery. Teddy Roosevelt outlawed it in 1907 with the Tillman Act. So back in 1952, when Senator Richard Nixon was running for vice president with Dwight Eisenhower on that ticket, Democrats pointed out that he'd taken $18,000, that's around $150,000 bucks in today's money, from some fat cat donors. Americans were so shocked by the allegation that Nixon had to go on national television to address those charges. It was his second most famous speech of all time, right behind his I Am Not a Crook speech, as he tried to reassure Americans that he would never, ever, ever cast a vote in a particular way or enrich himself because of his position as a senator. Remember, in that case, actually, probably none of you remember it. I don't remember it. I was a year old when he gave it. But in that speech, it's a famous and iconic speech in which Richard Nixon talked about how his wife had, instead of a fur coat, she had a good Republican cloth coat, and how their, you know, his campaign, unlike his opponent, his campaign did not hire his wife, even though she was a competent and skilled stenographer. Like, that was the only job that women could get back in 1952. But he still didn't hire his wife because that was the right thing to do. And in fact, the only gift he had ever taken, by the way, he was lying through his teeth. Nixon had been so bought off and mostly by the mob. He was probably one of the most corrupt politicians, certainly one of the most corrupt high-level politicians of the 20th century. But he said that the only gift that he took was this little black and white dog, this puppy that was shipped all the way from Texas to Union Station in Baltimore, where he went down and picked it up, him and his wife and their two daughters, and six-year-old Tricia just thought it was so cute, and she named it Checkers. And he said, and I'm going to keep that dog. It's not going to influence my vote, but I'm going to keep that dog. And, you know, like, you know, he humanized himself. And it helped him and Dwight Eisenhower win the election. We like candidates who are average people, or at least play the role of somebody who can understand average people. Harry Truman, after he left the White House, drove back to Missouri in his own house, in his own car, lived in a modest house until his death. Jimmy Carter walked to his inauguration. The Washington Post wrote about this right afterwards. What undoubtedly will be most remembered about Jimmy Carter's inauguration was that long walk from the Capitol to the Executive Mansion. It took him 40 minutes to cover the mile and a half. As he walked along with Amy prancing, jumping, and dancing along at his side, he was shattering recent presidential practice and legend the idea that a president must be remote and removed, excuse me, shattered the legend that a president must be remote and removed from the people. After he left the White House, Carter chose not to get rich. That's why he's still a beloved president. Instead, he was building Habitat for Humanity houses and working for world peace. Even Richard Nixon, the most criminal of the 20th century presidents, knew how important it was to seem like an average American when he was running for public office. Then came the 80s. Then came the Reagan administration. This whole greed is good, Gordon Gekko, yeah, let's say. And he had this lavish inaugural ball, cost millions and millions of dollars, paid for by millionaires and billionaires. It was beamed by satellite to 100 cities where other rich people could pony up and have a Reagan inaugural ball in their own town. And America changed with that Reagan presidency. To paraphrase John Steinbeck, after the Reagan era, the American working class people began to believe that they're merely temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. And so today we have a quarter billionaire, maybe even a half billionaire when you take the $100 million that he's given to his sons, Mitt Romney, a quarter billionaire who refuses to reveal the last decade. Heck, he refuses to reveal the last 3 years of his tax returns or the full details of his net wealth. Although Vanity Fair has found that he has bank and brokerage accounts in a variety of tax havens. That includes an account in Bermuda, the value of which was not disclosed in his tax returns. It also includes $30 million stashed away in the Cayman Islands, where there are no taxes. And there's $3 million tucked away in a Swiss bank account. And Romney also has an undisclosed amount of money sitting in bank accounts in Luxembourg and Ireland as well. Devin Dwyer of ABC News notes that what little we do know about Romney's efforts to hide his wealth, both from the American people and from the IRS, are pretty surprising. He wrote, and I quote, "The company in question, Sankaty High Yield Asset Investors Limited, is described by government financial documents as a Bermuda corporation wholly owned by W. Mitt Romney." Yet as both Vanity Fair, and I'm still quoting from the AP, yet as Vanity Fair and the Associated Press note in new reports, it has never appeared on the candidate's financial disclosure forms. Limited details on its existence only recently came to light when Romney released his 2010 tax return under public pressure. End of quote from the AP. Then Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair came out with this piece over the last couple of days, a big expose on where Mitt Romney stashes his money. Hint, hint, overseas tax shelters. Nicholas Shaxson wrote this thing. He writes, quote, even after examining that return, and he's talking about his the one tax return that Romney has shared with us, his 2010 one, where he made $23 million and paid 13.9% income tax. He said, even after examining that return, we have no idea what it is in this company. But it could be valuable, meaning that it is possible Romney's wealth is even greater than previous estimates. While the Romney spokespeople insist that the company has paid all the taxes required by law, investments in tax havens such as Bermuda raise many questions because they are in jurisdictions where there is virtually no tax and virtually no compliance, as one Miami-based offshore lawyer put it. So now the Romney, Koch, Karl Rove pitch, and by the way, you know, Romney worth hundreds of millions of dollars, the Koch brothers worth billions, tens of billions of dollars, Karl Rove worth multiple millions of dollars. Their pitch is that Mitt Romney should, and all of them, should keep their tax breaks and their Cayman accounts because you, average American, when you hit it rich, you'll want them too. I'm not making this up. This is their pitch. It's going to be interesting to see if working class Americans buy it. If they do, then it means that the mass hypnosis that working people have been under since Reagan came along, that greed is good and we'll all be rich one day, is still unbreakable. If they don't, if Mitt Romney's held to account and called out for what he really is, a pirate capitalist who cares more about finding tax loopholes and increasing profits than what's good for our nation, then it could be our nation's first big step forward toward cracking down on the oligarchs like Mitt Romney who've dragged the United States into financial crisis. I mean, think about this for a minute. In a lot of countries, when really, really rich people are running for office and they're using their own money or they're using the connections that they have, getting rich to get all kinds of money, they're referred to as oligarchs.
Oh, there was an oligarch who ran against Putin in Russia.
I forget his name, but he was an oligarch. He was the Mitt Romney. Why don't we refer to our oligarchs as oligarchs? What is it that is uniquely blind about America and Americans that causes us to say, oh, yeah, he's just a rich guy? Now, rich guys in other countries who are, you know, like running economies and trying to run government, they're referred to as oligarchs. Bernie Sanders at least says, hey, we're moving toward oligarchy. What is it? Oligarchy or democracy?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
According to Mitt Romney, it's oligarchy and should stay that way, damn it. It's a good thing. And according to the Republican Party. What do you think?
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
Oh, 7 years now, every week for 3 minutes, I get to talk about one of my favorite topics, has been since I was a little kid, science, my geeky science moment. This from Agence France-Presse, the headline, scientists suspect link between cat feces and female suicide. That would be human females. It turns out that there is a bug, a parasite, that infects cats like crazy. It's referred to in this article as T. gondii, G-O-N-D-I-I. And my recollection is that T stands for toxoplasmosa. Although I may be mispronouncing that and I might be wrong. I'm doing this from memory. But T. gondii, they did this study on 45,000 women in Denmark. It was reviewed and peer-reviewed and published in the Archives of General Psychiatry by Theodore Postelach at the University of Maryland Medical School. He said, we can't say with certainty that T. gondii caused the women to kill themselves, but we did find a predictive association between the infection
and suicide attempts later in life that warrants additional studies. About 1 in 3 people in the world are infected with this, with T. gondii. I believe it, as I said, I think it's toxoplasmosis. And it's been linked to schizophrenia and behavior changes. It often produces no symptoms. It lurks in the brain and muscle cells. And how do you get it? Cleaning out your kitty litter box and breathing the dust. Not a good idea. Higgins, what are you doing to us? As well as by consuming unwashed vegetables, undercooked or raw meat, or water from a contaminated source. Women infected with T. gondii were 1.5 times more likely to attempt suicide compared to those not infected. And the risk seems to increase, to rise with increasing levels of T. gondii antibodies. So the question that I don't know the answer to is there a treatment for Toxoplasmosis gondii? I'm guessing that there probably is, and it's probably something obnoxious like flagyl, but I don't know. So that's something, I don't know, maybe our chat room can, yeah, Toxoplasmosis gondii. Thank you, Sue Nethercutt. Sue N. in our chat room just tracked that down for me. Now, if you can find what kills it, I will publicize that. So that's the end of our Geeky Science Moment. Thank you for that. And Scott in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I was thinking yesterday, being July 4th and celebration of our independence, when we rebelled against the British Empire / East India Company, they were, you know, we were a colony. They were extracting our wealth.
Right.
You know, in fact, most of the empires in Europe were doing that all over the Americas. But I believe the same thing is happening now with the extraction of the USA's wealth, not to a specific country, but to a host of multinationals directed by a new breed of royalty.
Yeah.
These people are just the same. They're just the same as the kings and queens that actually started corporations back then.
Yeah, I agree. And it was Queen Elizabeth I who started the British East India Company in December of 1601. She signed the charter. And,
yeah.
And it was based on a model from the 1596, as I recall, which was the Golden Hind, which was Sir Francis Drake's ship. And that had been incorporated by the Queen also to limit liability. It was the first limited liability corporation, large corporation in British history. And the model worked so well, you know. Yeah, well, it limited the liability of the Queen and the members of the House of Lords, who were the principal investors. And so basically it was rich people saying, yeah, we'll let this guy go circumnavigate the planet and you know, see what he comes up with. And if anything goes wrong, we're limited in our liability to our investment. And it's that way to this day with corporations.
Yeah, the thing that you know, we're like colonies now to these multinationals.
Yeah, the Mitt Romneys of the world have become basically the colonizers of the earth. And the fact that Mitt Romney keeps his money in Ireland and the Cayman Islands and Switzerland and Luxembourg is, I mean, it just makes perfect sense. He's a multinational bankster. And so,
correct.
You know, you would expect him to keep his money in multinational locations. Scott, thank you for the call. He's gonna look for, you know, why and where. Elise in Santa Rosa. Hey, you wanted to talk about our geeky science?
Hi, Tom. I actually was very disturbed. I don't like these science studies that are done on men and only women.
Mm-hmm.
And this was done on only women because it actually wasn't done on women at all. It was done on babies, infants that were born.
Right.
They get blood tests.
Right.
And so they get the blood tests and they were studying the,
yeah, this is a longitudinal study.
Response. So they didn't actually study men at all. So it's not just women that perhaps have this problem.
You're correct. Thank you for correcting the record.
And so anyway, I just wanted to add that because it disturbs me that they say this as though it's just women that are committing suicide because of this, because they have no idea.
Yes, you are right. And you know, but the whole thing of Toxoplasmosis gondii is kind of creepy, and we need to figure something out about this and maybe... You know, everybody's hysterical about worming their cats. Actually, cat worms are probably good for the cats. They modulate the immune system. But
mm-hmm.
Toxoplasmosis, not good for the cats. I don't know. It's certainly not good for us. Thank you, Elise, for the call. And
can I add one other thing?
There have
also been these studies on, especially since that lovely oil problem in the Gulf,
yeah.
On shrimp that have had these chemicals that they're bathed in constantly now,
mm-hmm.
Has messed up their
neurological things. Instead of hiding from in crevices, they're starting to go out and say, hey, come and eat me, type of thing.
Well, some of that might be because many of them are being born without eyes, so they can't see where the darkness is.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm enjoying your show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Elise, and thanks for the call. Only 20 seconds. I just got a time cue. I'm sorry, Sina. We'll get back to you in just a minute. But this is our geeky science for the day. I'm still waiting to hear. There is a treatment for toxoplasmosis. Hopefully, our chat room will summarize that for me so I can share it with you. All I have is a link to the treatment. You can fool everybody, but dear Lottie, dear me, you can't fool a cat. They seem to know who's not right. Cat People 1942. Good one. Thank you, big guy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That, of course, big guy in our chat room, which you can get to at TomHartman.com. Coming up next, the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word ugly in your calls. The good, the bad, and the very, very casmophilously ugly, the good. Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee. Chafee has signed Rhode Island's Transparency in Political Spending Act into law. That act orders that outside groups running political ads tied to elections in the state must disclose all information on the big donors funding the ads. Amazingly, despite the impacts of the Citizens United decision, federal law still does not require political groups to disclose information on their donors. With the amount of damage the Citizens United has done to our democracy, it's more important than ever that we know who the billionaires are who are pulling the strings in Washington and across the country. Kudos to Governor Chafee and the Rhode Island legislature for putting some disclosure and transparency back into our broken political system. The bad. Congressman Bill Young, Republican of Florida. Yesterday, Young was asked by a constituent at a 4th of July parade whether he would support the Democratic proposal of raising the federal minimum wage to $10 an hour. When asked by his constituent, Young said he would probably not support the proposal. Then when that constituent replied, saying that the raise would ensure Americans a living wage, Young replied, "How about getting a job?" Apparently, Young is unaware of the fact that millions of minimum wage workers in America, like his constituent, do have jobs, but are still unable to live off the low wages. And let's not forget, Young and his colleagues are doing all they can to keep our economy down, which makes it very hard for Americans who don't have a job to find one. And the very, very ugly, Reverend Mel Lewis. Lewis, the founder of Christian Identity Ministries in Alabama, is holding an annual conference this week, but the only people invited to attend, according to a circulated flyer, are, quote, all white Christians, end quote. And rather than apologize for the racist hate speech, the church said that while it's not a hate group, quote, the white race is God's chosen people, end quote. And the church went on to say that, quote, we don't have the facilities to accommodate other people, end quote. Shouldn't surprise you, too, that among the attendees of the conference is the KKK. Yes, officially. So Lewis and his colleagues are trying to take America back to the end of Southern segregation and openly spread racist hate speech in our country. And that is very, very ugly. Boy, that's mind-bogglingly ugly. Toxoplasmosis, by the way, Sue in our chat room passes along. Pyrimethine, an antimalarial sulfonazine. It looks like getting rid of this stuff is actually fairly difficult to do, particularly since there's like a cyst stage for the... Man, nasty disease. Russ in Carverville, Indiana. Hey, Russ, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to talk about something that it's taken me 20 years to observe from being in the voting room that we have in where we are, which we're in townships. It's very rural. And when someone moves into the community, I'm sure those observers there, notice a new face because we know each other. I'm a known Democrat, and again,
when I went in, the woman who she's a Republican and she's an observer. She, we know each other. She's my neighbor,
mm-hmm.
and she recognizes me. But through all my voting experience, while we've been producing IDs, if she recognizes someone that she knows is a Republican, they're not asked for ID. They're looked up in the book and crossed off then as voted. But I, and I'm known to this woman, am always asked for ID.
Yeah, well, and welcome to the new GOP world. Russ, thanks for sharing that story with us. It illustrates the, you know, the problem with this stupidity, frankly. It's, anyhow, John in Philadelphia. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
I was actually calling, I was prompted to call by an earlier caller, but several others have brought up the issue. This is the guy who his friend asked him, would you rather have the economy handled by a community organizer or a banker? And I would submit that Mitt Romney's not a banker, he's a businessman. And we've had about six of them since 1900. Truman was a bad one, and he was a good president. Yeah, none of the others appear in the top half of that list that they compile every few years of the best presidents. George H.W. Bush is the highest ranked successful businessman, number 22. And the other ones are Hoover, the other Bush, Harding, and Jimmy Carter. I doubt most of the people who are saying we'd like to have it run by a businessman are thinking Jimmy Carter and George W. Bush whenever they're saying that. But I do think it bears mentioning that we've had some really bad experiences with, including two recessions, or depression and the Great Recession, brought on by businessmen as presidents. And I think that's something that should be handed back to them every time they say, well, you should have a businessman doing this.
Excellent point. Excellent point. John, thanks for calling and making it. Dennis in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. You had a caller earlier, Jim from Pennsylvania, that made a comment about people not having pensions at work. And as a 62-year-old that had 401ks pretty much my whole working life, when I turned 59, my 401k lost over 50% of its value.
Ouch.
And I have a moderate to conservative investments. You know, I 30% bonds, 70% stocks, and pensions are a better way to go. At least from my experience and what I can say, I've got some of it back, but I'm still not whole again.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I should have taken my own advice back 20, 30 years ago. It's a little late now. I don't have a pension, but I don't have a 401k.
At least with my Social Security, it didn't go down.
Yeah, you're right. And Social Security is a defined benefit pension plan, basically,
mm-hmm.
you know, or at least two thirds of it is.
That's what it is, yes. Yeah. And I just wanted to let that caller know that the 401k, the private retirement accounts, are not the answer when you have a poor economy run by the Republican Party, which George Bush did.
Yeah, well said. Thanks a lot for the call, Dennis. Pat in Boyd, Wisconsin. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Hey, two quick things.
Mm-hmm.
One, I want you to know about Ron Johnson. He is a flat earther who doesn't believe in climate change.
Yeah, I know.
This is the second day in a row in my city that's 105 today. It was over 100 yesterday, and this is 11 days in a row over 90. I think he might want to come back to Wisconsin and find out what's going on.
Yeah, we have broken something like 18,000 records now in the last month or two. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
His position is against the science part
other than
on.
1 year when we had an El Nino, which I think was 97, 16 of the last 17 years have been the hottest years in history on record, and they're getting hotter and hotter year by year by year.
Another quick thing is Wisconsin has one of the best pension plans in the country. It's fully funded, and Scott Walker's got his eyes on it, and it's steal it so that he can do whatever he wants, and he wants to go 401k. And we who are going to be or have the pension don't want him to mess with it because it's been managed well.
Yeah, but he's got Wall Street billionaires who are giving him money, and they want their hands on that pension money.
Yeah, well, because it's funded. They get all kinds of good things coming out of that. Can I ask you a question, too?
Sure.
The Barclay Diamond, the man that resigned and caused these things.
His name is, I think, Bill Diamond or John Diamond, something like that. But Barclays is the bank, yeah.
Is he related to the Jamie Diamond?
No, Jamie Diamond is spelled D-I-M-O-N. And the guy who runs J.P. Morgan Chase here in the United States and the bankster who runs Barclays in the U.K. is Diamond like the diamond, D-I-A-M-O-N-D. So
okay. Well,
they just
thanks for clarifying that because I had heard both of them pronounced, and it was hard to pick up the difference.
Yeah, there's no D in Jamie's last name, and they're unrelated. Although they both are banksters and major banks, and they both appear to have made a lot of their money, a lot of their millions or billions by scamming the people. So
that's why I wondered if there was a connection.
Yeah, I just in their sociopathy. Pat, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Bill in Benton, Kentucky. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Love your show. Always learn something. But I have an idea about the voter ID proposals that some of the Republicans want to have with a photo ID.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of fighting it, why not just have a requirement that any state or, you know, any government or any entity, rather, that has an election that wants to require somebody to provide photo ID has to send their DMV or some other organization to the polls and set up a free station where people that don't already have a photo ID can get one for free to vote. They just have the same documentation they have, you know, normally to prove they are who they are, and then they have that ID from then on. And that would kind of take the teeth out of the Republicans, you know, claims that dead people and felons and illegal aliens are voting all over the
place. Well, A, dead people, felons, and illegal aliens are not voting all over the place. So really there's no need for any of this stuff. What we need to be doing, I think, is calling out these voter suppression attempts for what they are. Paul Weyrich laid this thing out in 1980 as part of the Republican motto and mantra when he said, you know, I don't want everyone to vote. Voting, you know, voters, elections are not decided by the majority of voters. They never have been, they never will be, and they never have been since the beginning of this republic. He said, frankly, in an election, our leverage goes up as the voting populace goes down. And that's pretty close to verbatim. And this is something that has been the Republican mantra for 32 years. And arguably longer than that. I mean, that was just when he said it out loud in public.
Right, I understand, and I agree that there isn't a lot of that going on, but why not call their bluff? And because they'll realize, why were we spending all this money having the DMV there to hand out IDs to people that don't need them?
Yeah, well, part of the problem with that, Bill, is that every state's DMV operates on different rules, and so it wouldn't be practical. But I think that what we really need to do is be pointing out that more people are struck by lightning than vote illegally. Mitt Romney excluded.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Not as in Mitt Romney was struck by lightning, but as in Mitt Romney claimed that he was living in Massachusetts when he was living in California so he could vote against Ted Kennedy, which is voter fraud. Welcome back, Sam in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Hey, Sam, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Tom, I would like to ask you, who's have the power? Congress have the power to stop people that goes to college from paying for college. I think it should be free, or do the president have that power?
The president has the power to sign laws that are passed. In other words, he's the final rubber stamp, as it were, but he doesn't have the power to initiate laws. There are some things he can do by executive order, but they're actually fairly limited. So it would be up to Congress, and anything that has to do with money has to originate in the House of Representatives, which is right now controlled by Republicans. So if we wanted to say that we're going to do something like we did in the 1940s and 50s with the GI Bill, where we say, you know, anybody who meets certain qualifications, in that case it was going off to World War II, which virtually every man in America did, can go to college for free, and then that has to start in Congress.
I really think it should be people should go to college free, young people.
I agree.
And then
I agree.
Do some community service just to pay back something and then go on into their practice.
What a lot of countries do, Sam, is that after you graduate from high school, I lived in Germany for a year, and they were doing this in Germany at that time in the 80s. I don't know if they still are, but after high school, you would spend 1 year either in the military or as a volunteer with a nonprofit organization. And, anywhere in Germany, travel around the country, some of the jobs took people outside the country. And then in exchange for that year of service, you got a free college education. And that's how a lot of countries do it. And I think it's a great way because it gives young men and women that rite of passage after high school, that sense of I'm now becoming an adult, which is psychologically an important milestone. And we've lost a lot of our rite of passage rituals. And so it gives them that. And rather than this protracted adolescence where people leave high school and they go to college and they stay in college for 4 or 6 or 8 years, et cetera, et cetera. I'm totally with you. I think that's very well said. Thank you for the call. Eddie in San Jose. Hey, Eddie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Just to answer that question a couple callers back, how do guys like Mitt Romney make their money? This article that you mentioned in
Vanity Fair.
Nick Jackson.
Yeah.
He went into a little detail about an investment that Romney's made in Elliott Associates. That's Paul Singer's company, and Paul Singer is a GOP super donor. He's given $1 million to Romney's super PAC. He's also a guy who Lee Fong from Think Progress and Republic Report mentioned as speculating on gasoline futures, including earlier this year, that fund, Elliott Associates, was making somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 per tank of gas from the average American every time they filled up their car. So that's another way these guys make their money.
Yeah, is basically hustling on commodities and hustling on speculation and all that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Excellent point. Thank you, Eddie, for calling and making it. I have not yet read the Vanity Fair article in its entirety. I've read excerpts from it. I've got to read the whole thing. It's just amazing. Just amazing. George in Aberdeen, New Jersey. Hey, George, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? I just want to thank you for everything you do for the progressive cause. And one thing I just want to call out, I watched a good movie over the weekend. It was Too Big to Fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically described the actions of the bankers during the Bush administration.
Yeah.
How they tanked.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It's a great movie. And if the people really want to get an idea of what a Romney presidency would be all about, they should watch that movie. And one thing to note, the group that came to the rescue of the American public and stop the economy from collapsing was the Democrats in Congress. And that's the most important thing. Democrats are for the people. Republicans are for the rich.
Yeah, well said. And I think everybody is starting to get it. Thank you, George. Dan in Minneapolis. Hey, Dan, thanks for listening to KTMF, Minnesota's progressive voice. What's up?
Thank you for taking the call.
KTNF.
I was very excited by the Supreme Court decision a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
However, since then, I have been hearing from Republicans that all they need to do is to take the Senate and they can repeal it because it does not require, because it's now declared as a tax, it does not require a supermajority. So that scares the heck out of me.
That's right. It's not that it doesn't require a supermajority because nothing requires a supermajority other than confirming judges and Supreme Court justices and ambassadors and things like that. What it does is it makes it unfilibusterable. So you can't stop it with a filibuster, which takes 60 votes to break, a supermajority to break. And Mitch McConnell pointed this out on Fox News on Sunday. I pointed it out a week ago, last Friday. Mitch McConnell came out on Sunday and said, yes, if we get a majority in the Senate, we're going to do it. Oh, you have the clip. Oh, great. Here's the clip.
The Chief Justice said it's a tax. Taxes are clearly what we call reconcilable. That's the kind of measure that can be pursued with 51 votes in the Senate. And if I'm the leader of the majority next year, I commit to the American people that the repeal of Obamacare will be job one.
Yeah. Now, he can do that if Obama is still in the White House, though, and the reconciliation vote goes through to do away with Obamacare. And, if the Republicans control both the House and Senate, that's not inconceivable. The president can still veto it. So, and then it would take a 2/3 vote to override his veto, which I think is extremely unlikely. So I'm not all that concerned unless they sweep it. If the Republicans pick up the White House and the Senate and keep the House, then you could plan on seeing Obamacare take a ride. And that ain't a good thing. Not a good thing at all. Dan, thanks a lot for the call. All the more reason to get out there and get active, to show up, to participate. Coming up tomorrow, boy, it seems like a Monday, doesn't it? Tomorrow is Friday. If it's Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, will be here talking about the important issues of the week and taking your calls, plus anything goes on Town Hall Friday. We're going to also talk with Senator Sherrod Brown about fixing our trade policies and the best of the rest of the news. Don't forget, democracy starts with you. Get out there, get active, show up. Tag, you're it. Occupy something. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.